Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ball popped in the air, shallow right, long run, Harper, sprinting, and it'll fall fair. Around third and in to score is Scope. A little bloop fly ball to right field that hugged the line. It found space, and it turns into an RBI single, and the AL leads it 1-0. Miguel Sano delivers the first run of the game. 2-2 hit in the air, right field. Pretty well struck, up and back, track, wall, out of here. Yadier Molina the other way. That one landed in the bullpen in right field, and we're starting over. Tied at one. Yadi goes oppo for the NL. Swing and a drive. Well struck. Right field on its way. Out of here. Into the bullpen in right field. And Robinson Cano will trot around the bases. AL2, NL1, here top 10. Bellinger wait and a 1-2. Swing and a miss, struck him out, and the American League wins it. Fifth in a row that the American League has won in 10, 2-1 the final, and the Robbie Cano homer in the 10th, the difference here tonight.
It's a great feeling, you know, I've been coming to an All-Star game, and I always dream to hit a homer. Try one time at least before I retire to get an MVP at the All-Star game to see how that feel. I mean, winning a home run derby, WBC, and in World Series, I mean, it all feel the same. I mean, it's a exciting moment, it's a great moment in my life, and something that I will never forget.
The number. Why is 21 a number? Because that's how long I've been kicking. I don't give a if it's a ring. I don't give a if it's an octagon. Put me in there and I'm going to kick.
Don't be talking. You do give a if it's an octagon.
I ain't back down for no motherfucking body. You light him up and I knock him down like bowling pins. And August 26th, I'm going to knock this bitch out too. He look good for a seven-figure fighter. He look good for an eight-figure fighter. But motherfucker, I'm a nine-figure fighter.
He's in a f***ing track suit. He can't even afford a shoe anymore. The roses are 2012 outside. He is f***ed. There's no other way about it. His little legs, his little core, his little head. I'm going to knock him out inside 4 rounds, mark my words. This boxing press conference is a completely different setup than we're used to. 20,000 people. It's mind blowing. I'm absolutely honored to be here before you to give you this great spectacle. And somebody's O has got to go.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, welcome to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are the Toledo Sports Leader. I'm having too much fun with the press conference yesterday. Held the first of four, by the way. Held to promote the fight on August 26th between Floyd Money Mayweather and Conor McGregor. I'm laughing, even though Conor McGregor was the funniest guy at the podium, and he was by a lot, I'm laughing more at Floyd Mayweather for all of the crap that he just said. I've been knocking people out for 21. He's talking about 21 years, I assume.
Yep.
I don't care who it is in front of me. I knock him out. That dude has no interest in knocking anybody out. He got on his bicycle in front of Manny Pacquiao and rode it for 12 rounds. He'll get on his bicycle and ride it for Conor McGregor for 12 rounds. He'll win. He'll outpoint him like he outpoints everybody because he doesn't take any chances of putting himself in harm's way. Dude has no interest in knocking anybody out. Who are you kidding? You aren't coming within 4 feet of Conor McGregor's hands because you're afraid if he catches you wrong, if you zig when you should have zagged, it's night-night time. You are going to dance and jab and poke and throw those non-threatening, non-damage-causing punches for 12 rounds. You're great at it. and you'll outpoint him 12 straight times. You'll get 10 for each round. That's 120. He'll get 9 for each round. That'll be 108, and that'll be the final. It'll be 120-108, unanimous decision, and everybody will go away disappointed because there was no action. McGregor will try to press the action. He'll push. He'll come in there trying to knock you out. But being the expert defensive fighter that Floyd Mayweather is, he will not let him touch him. And he sure as hell isn't going anywhere near inside to try to knock McGregor out because of the fear of getting hit himself. So give me a bleeping break. What an entertaining press conference yesterday. My favorite part about it, I have to say, my favorite part about that press conference would have to be the fact that Conor McGregor was wearing a pinstripe suit. And as he announced from the podium, the pinstripes, if you zoom in on them, spell out F-U. It's the F-U suit from the Conor McGregor collection, one that he says will be released in August. He said literally has his own suit line that's being designed for him and for sale. And that I find to be just this side of hilarious. He is just a character. Kushlin, that started the McGregor, Mayweather, you know, promotional verbal jousting started long before they ever got to the press conference yesterday.
So very true.
It was Conor McGregor who was walking down Rodeo Drive in L.A. On Monday. No, yesterday, Tuesday. And he's walking shirtless, which, of course, why wouldn't he? He's Conor McGregor, and he's got the very distinctive tattoos. Everybody recognized him immediately, which sent cameras and microphones flocking to him. And the first one that I heard, somebody said, Conor, well, the president of Ireland will be at the fight with Mayweather. And McGregor looked at him and said, I'm the effing president of Ireland. For all intents and purposes, he is. He's more popular in Ireland, I promise you, than whoever the real president of Ireland is.
Yeah, I don't need a poll for that. I'm pretty sure that last statement's correct.
Oh, and you know what's hilarious? The funniest thing, honestly, about all of this is people are getting bent out of shape over the press conference.
Oh, jeez.
They're calling Conor McGregor a racist, saying he went too far because Floyd Mayweather got up there in his... And by the way, what I find really interesting is Floyd Mayweather, in my opinion, was trying to make this about nationalism. Floyd's outfit that you heard Conor make fun of in that opening montage was a tracksuit, indeed. It was like all sweats. But if you noticed it, it was red, white, and blue starred. Which to me, now it didn't say USA on his front of his hoodie, which is red, white, and blue starred. It said TMT, which is the money team. That's what he's all about. It's,
right.
It's Money May. But it was all red, white, and blue, which to me made it appear as though Floyd was going to make this nation versus nation. This is America, baby. And you Ireland folk, you're not going to come in here and beat me, you know, in my town, in my city, in Vegas, in my country, blah, blah, blah. You know, he was going to try to make it us versus them, nation versus nation kind of a thing. Kind of like in a very, very different sense because we're not at war with Ireland. But, you know, with Rocky wearing the red, white, and blue of Apollo against Drago, and it became U.S. v. USSR.
I was wondering how long it was going to be into this before you got to that.
Well, it, you know, the reason I'm going to blow it by that is it quickly became not that. Rather than being about the red, white, and blue stars and stripes against Ireland, it quickly became black and white. It quickly became, oh, my goodness, this white guy just told Floyd Mayweather to dance for him. Holy God. And people have lost their minds over it. Twitter going crazy. How dare he? Dance for me, boy, dance for me? A little context here for some of this. First of all, I'm looking at the New York Post. Michael Blaustein writing, headline, Dance for me, boy, McGregor Mayweather got racial fast. During the first stop on the joint promotional world tour in L.A. on Tuesday, McGregor made fun of Mayweather's clothes, mocked his unpaid tax bill, which he should. I'll get to that in a moment. And promised to knock the boxing great out in less than four rounds. That isn't happening. Floyd Mayweather's going to win. He's going to win easily. But then Mayweather got to shadow boxing, which amused McGregor to no end. And as McGregor shadow boxed, McGregor laughed at him and then grabbed the microphone and said, "Dance, dance for me, boy." Clearly PO'd, Mayweather stopped shadow boxing and started to stalk toward McGregor, who quickly changed his tune. "Dance for me, son, dance for me," he screamed as Mayweather returned to the podium. The racial undertones of the statement, writes the New York Post and a whole lot of people on Twitter, are obvious, with the internet immediately seizing upon it, saying McGregor had gone too far. McGregor's racial taunt will come as no surprise to MMA fans because he's repeatedly used race as a marketing tool in the past. While promoting his fight against Nick Diaz in 2016, McGregor called him a cholo gangster from the hood. McGregor also used race to drum up interest in a fight with the Brazilian great Jose Aldo at the pre-fight press conference in Brazil. McGregor said, "I own this town. I own Rio de Janeiro." Oh, my. You know who didn't think it was a racist taunt? You know who didn't think that it was anything more than boxers promoting a fight? Floyd Mayweather, Sr. Floyd Mayweather, Sr. said, "Come on. This is standard promotional fare. It's not about race in any way, shape, or form. This is what fighters do. Anything that they can do to drum up more interest." Jim, can you play what you had already played? Just the Mayweather-McGregor montage at the end of the, or a part of the montage, I should say, at the end of the opening show montage. Can you play that again for us? I want to hear this again, please.
21 is the number. Why is 21 the number? Because that's how long I've been kicking. I don't give a f*** if it's a ring. I don't give a f*** if it's an octagon. Put me in there and I'm going to kick.
Don't be talking f***. You do give a f*** if it's an octagon.
Stop it right there. Stop it right there. That part is hilarious. "I don't care if it's a ring or if it's octagon. I'm going to step in there and kick it." And McGregor is immediately, "You do too care if it's an octagon." Because you know damn well you're not getting in an octagon right. With me. Where arm bars count, kicks count, rear naked chokes count. Ground and pound counts. Yeah, you better do believe you care that it's octagon. That's hilarious. Continue, please.
"I ain't back down for no motherfucking body. You line him up and I knock him down like bowling pin."
You line him up and I knock him down? Floyd, I don't think has knocked anybody down since 1999. Dude doesn't knock people down. Dude runs from people and jabs and counterpunches and jabs and wins on points. It's what he does. He doesn't like taking chances. He doesn't want to mess up the pretty boy face. Pretty boy Floyd, Money Mayweather, doesn't knock him down like bowling pins. But keep talking. Let's hear it.
"Body, you light him up and I knock him down like bowling pins. And August 26th, I'm going to knock this bitch out too.
Stop.
He look good."
This, does anybody not understand that 95% of what you heard in that press conference yesterday was scripted?
Yeah.
Did it sound like Floyd Mayweather was off the cuff? He had the lines ready to go.
Right.
"I'm going to knock, I 21, that's the number, 21. You know, I've been knocking fools out for 21 years. You lying to me." I mean, it's clearly planned anger, planned theater. What we saw yesterday in L.A. at this press conference, honestly, was WWE at its best. This is, Hulk Hogan talking smack about Nikolai Volkov, or this is The Rock talking smack about Stone Cold Steve Austin, and vice versa. This was staged theater. Why? Because the fight has been priced on pay-per-view at $99.95 for HD viewing. $89.95 if you choose to watch it in standard definition. And guess what? They each get a percentage of the take. Yes, they have a guaranteed amount that they'll make for the fight. Mayweather's much higher than McGregor's. But then they, of course, get a percentage of the take. What is the pay-per-view total going to be? And we each get a certain percent of that that's been negotiated. And, of course, tens of millions of dollars will be made. So every new fan that they can draw in, or every new sucker that they can draw in, even if it means let's play the race game. We got a black guy. We got a white guy. One of them is Irish. The other one is a very outspoken, flamboyant African-American. And we are going to pit them against one another, and we are going to say stuff that is going to get everybody, oh, my God, he did not. And people are taking it seriously, except, as I said, for people with brains, smart people, who understand the fight game, like Floyd Mayweather Sr. Racist? I don't know what that got to do with race, he told TMZ moments after the news conference at Staples Center. Floyd Mayweather Sr., who heard Conor McGregor tell his son, dance for me, boy, dance for me, as Mayweather shadow boxed. And by the way, I wouldn't have waited till he started shadow boxing to drop that line. If I was Conor McGregor, as soon as Floyd Jr., took that microphone and said, I knock people out and been doing it for 21 years. I'd have been like, who are you knocking out? You do nothing but dance in every one of your fights. You're a dancer. Dance for me, boy. Dance for me. I would have used that line if he hadn't started shadow boxing. Floyd Sr., racist? I don't know what that got to do with race. This is a boxing match. I don't know what that got to do with no racist. And, of course, everybody else says, what? He said boy. Clearly, that meant that he doesn't like black guys. Called him a boy. Told him to dance for him. Like he's some sort of a slave that he can just be ordered around by this white Irish guy. Guess what? I don't know if that one was scripted WWE style, but I know that McGregor knows how to improvise on the fly. The more wild stuff he says, the more click. There's another purchase, click. Yep. There's another purchase, click. $99.95, click. You get several thousand more clicks for every line like that, and you laugh at these fools all the way to the bank. And not just Conor. But again, since he gets a bigger slice of the pie, Floyd Mayweather, since it's his game, it's his sport, he gets the bigger slice of the pie. Everything that Conor McGregor calls him, or says about him, or says to him, that ticks people off and makes them click, makes Money Mayweather even richer. And that, to me, is the funniest part about this. They're trolling people together. I would be willing to bet a mortgage payment that Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, if they hadn't texted with one another personally, or had a phone call with one another, or a secret meeting behind the curtain before coming out for the press conference, worked out what they were going to say. Here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to insult you about this. I'm going to look at your clothes. I'm going to do that. You say this about me, and we're going to go at it hard, and we're going to troll all these fools and make everybody think we're serious and make everybody think this is about race or country or whatever. And every time they click, we get richer, and then we'll go out there and do our thing for 12 rounds and go home with a hell of a lot of retirement money. I would be willing to bet a mortgage payment or two or 10 that that has already happened. If not the two of them, their representatives.
Right.
Conor's right-hand man to Floyd's right-hand man. All right, here's what Conor's going to do. Here's what Floyd's going to do. Okay, good. Let's get it done. No punches, no pushing. Well, you know what? And I'll tell you this. There's three more to go.
Yep.
Do not be surprised if by the fourth one, maybe as early as the second, but I doubt it, maybe probably by the third, there will be a two-handed shove to the chest from somebody. Probably Conor, because he's willing to play the bad guy. He's willing to play the heel, the mouth that roared, the insulting, F-bomb-dropping man who wore a pinstripe suit with the pinstripes literally made up of tiny white letters that said F-U. But literally spelled out the whole way. That was his pinstripe suit. He's willing to play the heel. He played the heel against Nick Diaz. He's played the heel in virtually every championship fight he's ever been in the UFC.
Yeah.
He is totally fine with that role. And I promise you, he'll probably be the one to do it. Floyd will keep his cool, even though they may be jawing at one another and F-bomb dropping this and that and the other thing. Floyd will kind of just look at him and stand there and keep the cold stone glare right in the eyes of McGregor. And McGregor will probably be the one to do it, so he looks like the bad guy. He'll give a two-handed push to the chest, and then both of them will be, hold me back, hold me back, hold me back. And everybody like, you know, the whole world. Forget about the country. Forget about Vegas. All of Ireland? Most of America? Probably all of Europe? Hell, a big, giant part of Asia and Africa, too. I don't know if they watch much boxing in the Arctic, but I'm going to go with pretty much everywhere else. Click, 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 99.95, ding, 99.95, ding. More and more people are going to do it. Oh, my God, he pushed them. They almost came to blows. This is going to be the richest fight in the history of fighting. It's going to far surpass Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather in that department. And it's going to far surpass anything Mike Tyson ever did. And guess what? It's going to be a crappy fight. But it's going to be entertaining the way that press conference was. And I find it hilarious. I find it awesome. The problem for me is that I'm not going to buy the fight. I would have until a couple of days ago, until I found out about Floyd Money Mayweather. If you did not hear the story, well, you've been in a cave, at least a sports cave, and you've had your eyes squeezed shut, and your fingers poked in your ears, and you're singing, la, 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 I can't hear or see anything. You probably already know that Floyd Mayweather is in some trouble with the feds. Floyd has not paid his taxes, at least for the year 2015 that we know of thus far. IRS says he owes millions. Millions of dollars to the IRS in taxes. That Floyd said, I can't pay. I ain't got the money. Wait. What? Your nickname is Money May. Your entourage is called TMT, the Money Team. Floyd Mayweather stood before a national press conference yesterday, before the national press, at the press conference yesterday, and bragged about how how Conor McGregor might be a good seven-figure fighter, or maybe an eight-figure fighter, but he's a nine-figure fighter. And to punctuate the point, he pulled out of his pocket and held up for the cameras to see a check for $100 million that he says he hasn't even cashed yet. This is what a $100 million fighter looks like. He pulled out the check. 3 days ago, we learned that he just told the IRS, I can't pay my taxes until after the McGregor fight because I don't have the money. But he's holding a $100 million damn check. That is one of the stupidest things that I think I have ever heard before. Where the hell? And by the way, Conor McGregor jumped right on it. Conor McGregor jumped right on it as Floyd held up that $100 million check. Conor grabs the mic and goes, tell that to the tax man. Which is exactly what I wish somebody would have done. I wish the IRS had been waiting backstage and say, sir, why don't you just go ahead and sign that over here to us? You made $220 million for the Pacquiao fight in 2015 alone. Yeah, you owe us several million dollars. Why don't you go ahead and sign that over to us? We'll give you your change when we're done. I don't have the money, sir. I can't pay you, Uncle Sam. Not until I fight Conor McGregor. My money isn't liquid. It's all tied up in investments. It's all tied up in assets. It's not liquid, but I have a liquid event for which I'll be paid a couple hundred million more coming up in August. Can I pay you then? And then he holds up the very definition of liquid, a check with his name on it that can be turned into cash in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, push enter, done at your local bank. $100 million of liquidity. And he's bragging he's got $100 million in his pocket that he hasn't even cashed yet. But he doesn't have the money for his taxes. And because of that, I refuse to give him $100 million and $99.95. My $99.95 is not going to Floyd Mayweather. Okay? That's not happening. And even if he gets, I don't know, 45 of it, and McGregor gets, 25 of it, and then the costs and the TV people and the promoters, et cetera, get the rest. I'm not giving him mine. Not in a situation like this. But I will tell you this. They are putting on one hell of a show, WWE style, old-time boxing style, reminds me of some of Muhammad Ali's best language and insults, racial and otherwise, that he did back in the day. Why? To drum up support for the fight. More people who buy, the more money we make. And Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather know how to do those two things. Click, click, click. Ding, 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 99, 95, 99, 95, 99, 95. It's just that I won't be a part of it. I will look for it. I will look for the results, but I just will not pay money for it. Interested in your thoughts. And yes, of course, there was an All-Star game last night. And yes, one of the players that we follow here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, as we bring you close coverage of the Indians and the Tigers in the American League Central. It was indeed Andrew Miller, who closed out the win. We'll talk a little baseball coming up, but I want your thoughts on McGregor and Mayweather. You saw the press conference yesterday. Did you have any problem with what you heard? Did it go too far? Was it racially motivated and tainted? And are you going to buy this fight? Want to hear from you at 866-240-1065. By the way, also, that phone number is what you want to call if you would like a four-pack of Any Day Ground Passes to the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows that starts on Monday. Four-pack of Any Day Ground Passes goes to caller number... Let's go seven this time around. Caller 7-866-240-1065 right here on The Ticket. Back after this. What do you mean I'm hot? We're back? What the heck? I'm sitting here entertaining myself with audio of the press conference yesterday. I didn't hear the commercial end. Sorry about that if we are back. But that was outstanding. I'm going to play a little bit more of this for you. This is the montage that Jim had for us, a little bit different than this one. So I want you to hear some of this. This is from ESPN. ESPN's little 50-second montage of the hype yesterday at the press conference between Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Conor McGregor for their August 26th. We could almost call it an exhibition bout. I mean, really, it is. McGregor, or,
that's a good way
Mayweather,
of looking at it, isn't it?
What's that?
I guess that's a good way of looking at it in a way, isn't it?
It kind of is. You know, Floyd Mayweather is 40 years old. He's retired. He's never been beaten. He is widely regarded when he was in his, you know, prime as the pound-for-pound greatest fighter in the world. 49-0. Conor McGregor's 28, 12 years younger, but he has never had a professional boxing match. He boxed some amateur before moving into MMA, which is where he made his name, his fortune, and his career. 19-3 in the MMA. Is just a tremendously heavy hitter. But that, of course, is a different type of hitting than when you're boxing. Because as you've seen in so many highlights of Conor McGregor, he catches you and knocks you down. He jumps on top of you and pounds the blank out of you until the referee stops it. But in boxing, you're not allowed to jump on top of him, straddle him, and pound him into unconsciousness. In boxing, if you get knocked down, you go to the neutral corner. So he can't do that to Floyd Mayweather. And first of all, he can't hit Floyd Mayweather, because Floyd Mayweather is too good of a defensive fighter. He's just, you know, not in the guy's league, if you will. Conor McGregor is a boxer. He's not in Floyd Mayweather's league. He knows that. And he knows that because it's a boxing match and not an MMA match, that it's not going to be very entertaining on its own merits. So most people, knowing that a fighter who's never had a professional fight, McGregor, challenging one of the greatest defensive fighters of all time, who's 49-0, is not going to be a very good sporting competition. How do they sell it? Well, it's got to be with the personal animosity. You got to sell the fact that these two guys hate each other, even though they don't. You got to make it look like one of them is racist, even though he isn't. You got to make it look like the other one is standing up for his proud heritage, even though it's not what it's about. You got to turn it personal. If you rely on the sporting competition of 49-0 against 0-0, really? Each fighter might make $200. So they've got to hype it this way. This is ESPN's version of the press conference yesterday.
How does this suit look? If you zoom in on the pinstripe, it says, you.
Sit quiet, you little...
And it does, by the way. I that part of it, I can't get over. He had a suit made, not McGregor, that says, and if you zoom in on the pinstripes, each pinstripe is made up of little white letters that spell out F blank blank K Y O U, just like he says. Zoom in on it. That's a guy that says, watch me, pay attention to me. And by the way, buy my fight and make me rich.
If you zoom in on the pinstripe, it says you. Sit quiet, you little. Give me that backpack. Let me show you what $100 million fighter look like.
And that's where he holds up the check. $100 million check out of his backpack. $100 million. And then McGregor's response to that?
That's to the tax man.
That's to the tax man. You got to give that to the tax man. That's just priceless. This is how you promote a fight.
I'm the IRS, and I'm going to tax your He's in a tracksuit. He can't even afford a shoe anymore. Talking that We know Mr. Tapo like to quit. He is
By the way, how did I mention that this thing was all scripted? Did I mention that both these guys had most of their lines, you know, pre-written or pre, you know, I don't think they had them written for them. But they planned what they wanted to say ahead of time. I also think there was a little bit of ad-libbing. I doubt very seriously, at least I want to hope, that last one you just heard the long bleep on, that it wasn't scripted out. Conor McGregor just looked into the cameras and screamed into the microphone, he is blanked. I wonder if he sat back there behind the stage and wrote out his lines, if he actually spelled, he is F-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U, blank, blank, E-D.
By the way, Bob, can I go ahead and say whether it's...
I think he had to have ad-libbed that one at least. It's just hilarious. Yes,
yeah, I'd like to hope so, too. And at this point, I'd like to go ahead and thank ESPN and others. I mean, you know, because, you know, a little behind-the-scenes thing, we can get access to some various, you know, clips and things like that that you may not be able to just look for at a computer. So I want to thank them right now for taking about 20 minutes worth of work away from me by already doing all the bleeps and all that for me. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, they really, well, you know, ESPN isn't going to be able to get themselves in trouble like this. Even on their website, they don't want this kind of thing.
They
took care of plenty of liberal beeping, making sure that no words were even going to
I'm just saying, from my point of view, you guys saved me about 20 minutes worth of work by doing that. Thanks, guys.
Yes, indeed. And by the way, I should also point out, there was one of them where I went, oh, my God, did they miss one? Because they cut off him saying, talking that S. And when you just hear the beeping that S, I thought, oh my God, that they missed an F word that mess or that S. So it was talking, not blanking with another ing, if you understand my mean.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
but anyway, Conor McGregor, he is blanked, and we'll pick it up there.
Mr. Tapo, like to quit. He is. You can get it right now. You can get it right now. I'm going to knock him out
and
inside.
And by the way, and I know you can't see it because we're doing radio, but I'm looking at video. The part where Mayweather is challenging McGregor to come and do it right now because he said he'd knock him out right now. He's standing at the podium is Mayweather. McGregor is sitting down, and he's in hold me back pose. I mean, literally. He's leaning forward in his chair, yeah. And he's got his arms pulled back, almost begging somebody to grab my arm so he can really make this look good. Because Mayweather's telling him, you can get it right now. Mayweather's telling him that. McGregor is off mic, so you can't hear him as well screaming, I'm going to get it right now. And Mayweather repeats, you can get it right now. And McGregor is in hold me back mode. I mean, you got to see it. I'm staring at it right now, and you can watch it, you know, obviously when you get around a video screen and the internet. But McGregor, he has his chest puffed out, his shoulders pulled back, and his elbows pulled back a little bit. Like, somebody over here, will you grab me, please? Otherwise, I'm going to have to go up there, and we're going to have to take this further than we wanted to. But that's how they're trying to make it look like. You got to hold these guys back. You got to separate these two because they are just going to kill one another. The bad blood is so deep. And it is so transparent. It is so obvious that none of this is real.
You can get it right now. You can get it right now. I'm going to knock him out inside 4 rounds. Mark my words. August 26th.
By the way, Conor, the only way you're going to knock him out inside of 4 rounds, mark your words, is if you give him a roofie or something before the fight. If you slip him a roofie... or, you know, some other kind of drug, that's the only way you're going to knock him out inside of 4 rounds. He's not going to let you near him.
We'll knock this out, too. I haven't knocked nobody out in about 20 years.
That's the one. That's the one, too. Mayweather, I'm going to knock this bee out here. And McGregor correctly pointing out, you haven't knocked anybody out in 20 years. You outpoint all of your opponents because you don't want to go anywhere near them because you don't want to get hit.
Knocked nobody out in about 20 years.
Let's get this world tour started. Let's have fun.
Oh, let's have fun indeed. That is some really, really good stuff. You going to watch it? And do you give McGregor any chance at all, even a puncher's chance? Because I'm at the point where I don't even think he has a puncher's chance. The reason I say that is punchers have a chance against superior fighters when the superior fighter is willing to punch with them. That's just it. Floyd Mayweather was not willing to punch with Manny Pacquiao. He hasn't been willing to punch with really anybody in a very long time. And he's not going to give this MMA fighter, who'd rather kick than punch, any chance to catch him with a blow when he can so clearly and with such superiority outpoint him just by keeping his distance and jabbing and poking and moving and hooking and making sure that McGregor never gets inside. So I don't even give him a puncher's chance because the other guy isn't going to be within punching range. It's just that simple. So are you going to watch it? Are you being hooked? Are you being trolled? Are you being, you know, snared by any of this false bravado and this racism charge and all this other nonsense? Jimmy in Toledo, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. James, what's going on, man?
What's up? Of course I'm going to watch it, but that's because I grew up in the 70s and 80s, the golden age of, the heavyweights, and then later with, you know, all the great middleweights and welterweights in the 80s. And I've really grown up and loved the MMA over the years, especially as boxing's really regressed and it's just become so corrupt.
Yeah, it has.
I really called to just talk about the press conference because I'm a huge McGregor fan. But I figured, you know, everybody's got a take on the fight, and we're hopefully going to talk about the fight more as you know, over the next month.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Conor, this is what I'll say is Conor, he obviously, everybody knows what would happen if it was in a, not in a boxing ring.
Right. If it was in did you like that, by the way, when Mayweather said, I don't care if it's an octagon or not?
Right.
Mayweather said, yes, you do.
Anywhere but a boxing ring, right? So Conor's at a very big disadvantage. Although, what I'll say, and I respect boxing so much because I'm such a fan of it, and I acknowledge Mayweather's greatness as far as defensive ability. And he's a great offensive fighter, too, despite, you know, what people say he's boring and this and that. When he was Pretty Boy Floyd, he used to beat people up pretty good. He just, you know, his hands, he's had problems with his hands over the years, and he kind of just turned into the money man when it became apparent that, you know, he had to go to a shtick to kind of be, you know, the bad guy and be the A side of the card. But that being said,
well, it's not really a shtick, though, in my opinion. It's just, I mean, he knows his best skills are defensive skills, not offensive skills.
No, I don't mean the shtick. I don't mean the shtick in the ring. I mean the shtick outside being the money man. He used to be Pretty Boy Floyd, and that's when he actually, ironically, used to knock guys out fairly regularly.
Yeah, when he was very young, he did.
Right. But anyways, I digress. My point about the press conference, I you can YouTube all this stuff, and the best press conference yesterday was the one afterwards when Mayweather Sr. crashed Conor's presser after that. You guys got to go watch YouTube and get up to date on that because that was even better. I disagree with you wholeheartedly. I think Conor was caught off guard yesterday. That whole thing, if you watch the live feed from the very beginning, Conor actually just wanders out on stage without an entourage, and he's out there several minutes, just out there, because I don't think he had any idea. He just showed up in his suit, and I think really the guys that organized everything was the boxing side of the house.
Yeah.
And he's accustomed to the UFC running the press conferences, and he just shows up when he wants, and it's usually the press.
Well, a lot of times he doesn't show up. That was one of the things that he had, the problems he had with Dana White, if you recall. He refused to show up and pre-promote a couple of his last fights.
That was one time he didn't want to travel and make from Ireland over to Vegas, but he's always promoted the fights. It's one of the ways he got so popular. But I disagree with that. I don't think any of this was scripted yesterday. And as a matter of fact, I think Conor was very surprised that he had to make a speech.
Hold on. You don't think that a guy who had a suit made up that had pinstripes that said FU planned on what he was going to say? Everything planned out.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't, Bob.
Hold on, Jimmy. Even if the plan, and this sounds contradictory, but I don't think it is in some cases. And I can tell you this
one.
Hold on. Let me make the statement, and then you can tell me you disagree with it. I think there can be something called planned ad-libbing. And the reason I say that is I have done radio shows like that, where rather than kind of, here's the topics I want to get to in the first half hour, second half hour, third, blah, 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 I'll plan to say, this is the first one, and I'm going to ad lib based on what people say about it from there. And I think Conor McGregor probably had a very strong script ready to go based on what happens, though, and would ad lib off of that because he's been so successful at it in promoting his UFC fights and making the most money that the UFC has ever made.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you because I've probably seen 60 press conferences that he's given over the years on YouTube and right. some of them live on Fight Pass.
Right.
And he even alluded to it with Ariel Helwani yesterday after the press conference that when he came in, he was kind of off kilter because he wasn't used to the way they had it set up. Nobody told him that he was just going to go up and speak, and he didn't have a speech prepared, so he just kind of winged it. And he was saying that in a very informal way to Ariel Helwani. He really, and if you know his shtick is more, he answers questions off the cuff. I'm not saying he doesn't have some things prepared.
Kind of like he did on Radio Drive when he said he's the Irish president.
Right, right. I mean, he's a character, Bob, so he's always going to be able to turn it on. But he usually, his press conferences are generally set up where he's working off of reporters are going to ask Conor something, they're going to ask his opponent something, and he's just going to come out with the zingers, and then he's going to interrupt the other fighter. Yesterday, they just said, go to the mic and say something. And that's not how, you know, he's just not used to
I'll tell you what, he had enough great material there about the taxes
absolutely,
and everything
but that's
else,
what he
and
is.
It sounds like he knew exactly what he wanted to do. Hey, on the fight, real quick, Jimmy, because I got to get some other people.
Sure, sure.
I say 120 to 108. I think it's a unanimous decision, and McGregor doesn't win a single round. What do you think?
Well, that's a win for McGregor, then, because if anything, then a man with absolutely no professional boxing matches does his as well as any champion that ever got in the ring with Mayweather.
That's true.
I don't think he can lose this fight unless he goes in there and gets knocked out in two rounds. I don't think his brand suffers. But if there's one person that has the audacity to go in there and maybe land something or do something, the only thing he's got going for him is his power of belief, his left hand, and the fact is Floyd has no tape, has no idea what he may do. And he might get
but here's
luck.
The real question, though, Jimmy.
It's not going to happen,
question.
But it
how,
may happen.
Hold on. How powerful is he really, and especially with that left hand? Because he's not throwing four-ounce gloves anymore.
No,
that can
absolutely.
Be followed up with, as I say, ground and pound if you knock somebody down. It's the 8-ounce glove, or is it 10? Is it a 10-ounce glove
ten.
Or
8-ounce
glove?
10.
In this fight? 10-ounce glove.
10.
So it's like throwing a balloon at somebody comparatively. And then when if he does catch him, he can't seize upon it. He's got to back away and let Floyd regain his senses. And then, of course, Floyd goes into protect mode, and away we go. I don't think there's any way Conor McGregor can tag him and hurt him because he just doesn't have the skills to get inside of that defense.
I don't necessarily agree or disagree with you. All I'm saying is it's, he may be so unorthodox if Floyd does feel like he hurts him at any point, because Floyd will touch him. Floyd's going to touch him. He's going to touch him a lot. The thing is, what people don't understand is Floyd, Conor isn't, he's a counter puncher himself. He doesn't go in there and he's a systematic guy, but he's a guy that's willing to take one to catch one. And if he can just find a way to take one from.
We have seen him. I saw him in one of his highlights where he took a shot flush on the jaw. But
yeah, that's Jose Aldo fight where he knocked him out on one punch.
Yeah, and then jumped on top of him and hit him with a back fist while on the ground, and boom, it was over, done.
So what he has to avoid is avoid the taunts of Floyd. What I think Floyd wants is Floyd, and I think Teddy Atlas, he said this on YouTube as well. Teddy Atlas said the worst thing for Conor to do would be to go in there and try to rough him up and go in and charge in on him in the first two rounds. That would play right into Floyd's counterpunching angle.
Agreed. And I don't think he'll do that. I think Conor knows that. And, Jimmy, I got to go. Thanks for the call. I'm going to get to Cam in Toledo next. I don't think he'll rush at him. I think he knows it's going to be a long fight, and it's going to take some time to figure out what it is that Floyd does to see if he can get inside and do that. And I also think Floyd is just as smart, in fact, smarter. He is not going to do anything that puts his face anywhere near the jeopardy that comes, as you say, with that left hand of Conor McGregor. I think it's going to be a very, very slow, methodical, boring kind of fight, because Mayweather doesn't want to mix it up, and McGregor can't mix it up because of Mayweather's defensive prowess. Cam in Toledo, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Good, man. What's on your
mind? Yeah. Oh, just I have to say that the fight, I in my opinion, a lot of people disagree with me. You know, I've gotten in an argument with my buddy over this. I think it's 100% scripted. I mean, you look at it this way.
Hold on, what's scripted? The press conference, you mean, or the fight itself?
The whole fight itself. I mean,
so the outcome is already predetermined, like WWE style?
I wouldn't even, not necessarily, but I mean, you look at it this way. If McGregor wins, what happens? The boxing world's turned upside down and in chaos.
And Floyd Mayweather's 49-0 legacy is gone, and he's got a one man in the L column, and it was to a guy that had never had a professional fight before.
Exactly. Now, if Mayweather wins, what happens? Nothing. It's okay, you beat. An analogy I used is, it's like if Tom Brady challenged Michael Jordan to a football quarterback contest. No kidding, Tom Brady's going to destroy him, you know? Just like if Michael Jordan challenged Tom Brady to a basketball, like a shoot-around. Obviously, Michael Jordan's going to win 10 times out of 10. You know, McGregor's asset is the fact that he can use his kicks, his takedowns, his punches, elbows, knees, all of that to string together an offense.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, and that is a great analysis. And, Cam, I got to run here. It's 4 o'clock. I got to get to our timeout at the top of the hour. Thanks for the call. You're 100% right. I don't think it's scripted. I think some of what they say before the fight is going to be scripted because they want to, and I think they're probably telling each other some of the things they're going to say to try to get each other's goat in order to drive up clicks of purchases of that fight. Once they get in the ring, it's not scripted like WWE, but it doesn't have to be because I think the script writes itself. Conor McGregor can't get inside and try to knock him out. He'll never outpoint him. The only thing he has is the puncher's chance of knocking him out. And Floyd Mayweather is such a great defensive fighter, he will never give that puncher's chance a chance to land that punch. So I think it's a decision, 12 rounds, and I think all 12 rounds are Floyd's. And it's 120 to 108. Great call, my friend. Thank you. Let me get a quick timeout here for the top of the hour. SportsCenter. And by the way, congratulations to Steve Kelbley, I believe it is, Fostoria, who's going to go to the Marathon Classic with the four-pack of Any Day Ground Passes starting next week at the Marathon Classic. We'll have another four-pack to give away in the next hour of the extravaganza coming up next.
Swing and a ball popped in the air. Shallow right, long run, Harper sprinting, and it'll fall fair. Around third and in to score is Scope. A little bloop fly ball to right field that hugged the line. It found space, and it turns into an RBI single, and the AL leads it 1-0. Miguel Sano delivers the first run of the game. 2-2 hit in the air, right field. Pretty well struck. Up and back, track, ball, out of here! Yadier Molina the other way. That one landed in the bullpen in right field, and we're starting over. Tied at one. Yachty goes awful for the NL. Swing and a drive. Well struck. Right field on its way. Out of here. Into the bullpen in right field. And Robinson Cano will trot around the bases. AL 2, NL 1, here top 10. Dellinger in a 1-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. And the American League wins it. Fifth in a row that the American League has won in 10, 2-1 the final. And a Robbie Cano homer in the 10th, the difference here tonight.
It's a great feeling, you know, I've been coming to an All-Star game. And I always dream to hit a homer. Try one time at least before I retire to get an MVP at the All-Star game to see how that feels. I mean, winning a Home Run Derby, WBC, and World Series, I mean, it all feel the same. I mean, it's a exciting moment, it's a great moment in my life, and something that I will never forget.
21 is the number. Why is 21 the number? If that's how long I've been kicking ass. I don't give a f*** if it's a ring. I don't give a f*** if it's an octagon. Put me in there and I'm going to kick ass.
Don't be talking You do give a f*** if it's an octagon.
I ain't back down for no motherfucking body. You light him up and I knock him down like bowling pins. And August 26th, I'm going to knock this bitch out too. He look good for a seven-figure fighter. He look good for an eight-figure fighter. But motherfucker, I'm a nine-figure fighter.
He's in a tracksuit. He can't even afford a suit anymore. The Rouses are 2012 outside. He is There's no other way about it. His little legs, his little core, his little head. I'm going to knock him out inside four rounds. Mark my words.
This boxing press conference is a completely different setup than we're used to. 20,000 people. It's mind blown. I'm absolutely honored to be here before you to give you this great spectacle. And somebody's O has got to go.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward and upward, we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. 11 minutes after 4, which means we got 49 more minutes of outstanding awesome coming for you, including Jim Cushlin's conversation with the voice of the Toledo Mudhens coming up in about a half an hour from now. Jim Weber's going to join us. Hey, Cush?
That's right. Figure, why not? Let's get a little Mudhens update. They're in All-Star break, too, right now.
Yeah, and obviously, the Hens are always an interesting thing for Toledo fans, particularly since there's going to be a lot of Hens. I would imagine there are going to be a lot of Tiger time coming up in September. As always, when the rosters expand, that happens. But maybe even earlier than September, because if some big names get traded, Jim, by the end of this month, and there's a lot of speculation and scuttlebutt, of course, that there are some Tigers on the block as they're out of the division race for all intents and purposes, you're going to see some of these youngsters at AAA going up to the big league club sooner rather than later.
Absolutely, and that's kind of one of the angles I'm certainly going to go and get everybody in town, you know, a primer of who we can expect, because, yeah, this will be a little different. This isn't just September call-ups, as you point out. There's going to be some guys, because in theory, there's going to be a few roster spots to fill probably within a couple of weeks, of course, too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we'll look forward to that conversation. And speaking of baseball, and we spent the whole first hour on the fight, and well, really on the press conference that led up to the fight, and so, or that's leading up to the fight, and there are three more scheduled. I think the next one's next week in Toronto. So they're really kind of going all over the place, and they're really going to hype the living daylights out of this, and that's exactly what they started to do yesterday. What I want to know, just one more thing about the fight, if people want to make calls about this, you certainly can. And I don't care whether you're black or white when you call about this, but do you think that there was a black-white thing going on there when Conor McGregor saw Floyd Mayweather shadow boxing and looked at him and laughed and said, "Dance for me, boy, dance for me"? Was that intended to be racist? Was that intended to use the connotations of boy and ordering, the black guy around to dance for him and entertain him, that sort of thing? Was it intended to be racially insensitive or racist? Or do you believe Floyd Mayweather Sr., who was asked about that, who said, "What? This isn't about race. What are you talking about?" He said, "This is boxing. That's called promoting the fight." And, you know, if you go back, you know, there were so many instances of this kind of thing in boxing in yesteryear where, you know, you had fighters who were extraordinarily charismatic, like Muhammad Ali, that didn't mind being the instigator of some really, really bad-blooded things. There's a well-known story that I was reminded of earlier today, that when Muhammad Ali was fighting Chuck Wepner, and Chuck Wepner was, you know, a white guy, and, you know, some people, you know, look at the whole Great White Hope thing and all of that sort of thing, and, you know, this white guy, the answer to Muhammad Ali and that sort of thing, and they were trying to hype the fight, and there wasn't a ton of interest in it, as the story goes. And so Ali, according to the story that I recall and that was reminded of earlier today, Ali told Wepner behind the scenes, this is what, you know, when I said a few minutes ago, Jim, that it would not surprise me at all if either McGregor and Mayweather had talked about what they were going to say and do, or their seconds, if you will, were talking. Behind the scenes of this Ali-Wepner fight, Ali, according to Eyewitness Observers, told Wepner to get it really going out there and to use the N-word, call me the N-word. Well, it'll drive people crazy, and we'll each make a bunch more money. And Wepner said, "No, I won't do it. I'm not going to do that." You know, this is probably right after the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 64. I want to say it was like 65 or 6. And Wepner is like, "No way. I'm not going to do that." So what did Ali do? They went out there to the press conference, and Ali said, "Yeah, I don't like this guy. You want to know what he said to me backstage? He called me the N-word." So Ali, he knew damn well there was a best way to sell tickets. and get more money and a bigger gate for himself and the promoter for Don King and everybody else was to get people into it from a personal standpoint, not just interested in the fight and the contrasting styles of the boxers, but the personal animus within them.
My God, this is all just promotions 101 in a way, too.
And it's working, like I said, because Twitter went nuts yesterday. Went nuts with McGregor saying, dance for me, boy. Oh, my God. And again, I'm looking at the New York Post with this article. McGregor went too far, and there's clear racial connotations here, and this is an Irishman who is notoriously bigoted and blah, blah, blah. And they're all buying it hook, line, and sinker. I'll give you another one that it was the same kind of thing, but did not involve two different races. And again, it was Ali. In fact, I got two more. I mean, there's a reason why Ali was the greatest promoter in the history of the world. You know what I'm saying? Got to be the greatest promoter of a fight of fighting in the history of the world, Muhammad Ali. When he had his brawls with Joe Frazier, what did he do to drum up more interest? He called Frazier dumb, said he looked like a gorilla, said all kinds of stuff that if a white fighter would say, like, oh my God, it's terribly racist. But he was a black guy. But it was enough to get Frazier so mad. And Frazier admitted 20 years after they retired, 25 years, heck, 5 years ago, Joe Frazier admitted that he still didn't forgive Muhammad Ali for that because it made him so mad and it made him want to kill Ali. And guess what? Him wanting to kill Ali is what led to some of the tremendous the trilogy that we saw. Ali knew how to push the buttons the right way. And he also pushed him. Here's the third and final example of the great promoter that is Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali played with George Foreman's mind before their 1974 bout in Zaire. In so many ways, the same thing. Insulting his intelligence. Insulting, you know, even... Now I'm going to have to... I think I may be confusing myself, and I apologize for this, but in one of those, I think it was Frazier... He actually called Frazier and Uncle Tom, which, of course, as we know, is a very derogatory stereotyping term for an African American or a black man who kissed up to the white community in order for favors from the white community. And this, of course, it's a racist statement, but within the same race, drove Frazier out of his mind because this was a proud black man who stood up for his black heritage in a way that just, I mean, it aided him, and it made him want to kill Ali, but it was all part of the promotion for Ali. And then again, he attacked the same thing, the intelligence of George Foreman. He ended up somehow taunting George Foreman into trying to pound him through the ring on those ropes in the first use of the rope-a-dope that Ali had ever done before. It's the only way he could have beaten him was to tire him out and to continue to taunt him. And he even got the fans in Zaire to chant Ali Boumaye, Ali Boumaye, which is Ali kill him, Ka'ali kill him. He had everybody against Foreman. And it was all part of the build-up and the promotion of the fight. And now here's McGregor and Mayweather, who's probably in on this, doing the same thing. Oh, McGregor, the money man, is too broke to pay the tax man. He can't even afford a suit anymore. Look at him. He's wearing a tracksuit. That's all he can afford now. You got a $100 million check there. Yeah, but it all goes to the tax man. And actually about a quarter of it will, because he owes $22.2 million to the tax man. Dance for me. All of this stuff is intended to build up an enmity and a hatred and a personal animosity between one another that, quite frankly, isn't real, but that will get a whole lot more people clicking the purchase button on their pay-per-view. So that's what this whole thing is about. But I am interested. Do you buy any of it, and are you offended by it? If you're an African-American, are you offended by McGregor saying, dance for me, boy? Or do you realize this is all going to make it? I promise you, who's not offended? Floyd. Floyd isn't offended. No way. Because Floyd knows every time Conor says something like that, click, 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 and his bank account gets bigger, bigger, bigger. And then, of course, he gets a bigger, bigger, bigger tax bill for the IRS that he won't pay. All right, but baseball. And that's where I really wanted to go for the rest of the segment. Jim Cushland talking about the All-Star game last night. It was, in a word, kind of boring. Why? Pitchers dominated. It was a 1-1 game. Obviously, it went 10 innings. Obviously, it took a Robbie Cano home run to give the American League the victory. And then a lockdown by Andrew Miller, the Indians' best reliever, even though he's not their closer, to get the save.
Mm-hmm.
Was the game everything that it was supposed to be? A lot of people said the Derby was exactly what people wanted and what it needed with Aaron Judge. But this game was lacking some of the fireworks. It was lacking some of the long balls, especially from the likes of Judge. It was lacking, quite honestly, since there was also nothing to it in terms of on the line without the very much criticized home field advantage rule for the World Series, it lacked intensity in many ways. It was just an exhibition that kind of, sort of, rivaled an NBA All-Star game where it was going through the motions. That's not to say the pitchers weren't trying to strike everybody out, because they were, and they did, and they had a great day. But the game wasn't as exciting as everybody kind of expected, because it's the best of the four All-Star games that made, you know, the four major sports in North America.
Mm-hmm.
People expected a lot more, I think, than what the game delivered.
I think a lot of times that is the case, but you got to remember, it is still baseball. And what I mean by that is, if you go into an All-Star game mode expecting it to be 8-7, more often than not, you're going to be disappointed. Even in the exhibition style, what's the old baseball adage that seems true no matter what era you're talking about? Good pitching will beat good hitting.
Very true.
So you're going to have – so in essence, what I'm saying is 2-1, even if it went 10 innings, always remember in an All-Star mode, and you can look this up, that's a more common score, you know, than an 8-7. So from that front, I wasn't completely disappointed, you know, by that, because in some ways that's kind of to be expected when the best pitchers are going out there. You're pitching beats good hitting. That's a time honored adage for baseball that seems to be always true.
And if you are okay with that 2-1 game and love great pitching, you probably enjoyed the hell out of the game last night.
Yeah.
But that 2-1 time-honored tradition that you're talking about is what has led baseball to try to figure out, what can we do to make our game more exciting? Our game is slow-paced. Our game is kind of boring at times. There's no base runners on. We got a ground out here, a strike out there, and a pop-up there, and we're changing innings. And we got another, and the same thing over and over again. We need some fireworks here. So that's the real conundrum here. These are the best hitters in the world against the best pitchers in the world. Pitchers won, and that's fine. But is it fine for the purpose of the Midsummer Classic? Is it this is a long way of me saying, is Bryce, because I liked it yesterday and I'm going to like it again today.
Mm-hmm.
Is Bryce Harper right? Can we make the game a little more fun since we do the national versus American thing all the time and we get a slow, kind of a boring game like this most of the time? Can we intrigue or lift the intrigue a little bit? Can we try to make it a little bit more entertaining by letting the draft thing happen and have teammates oppose one another and that sort of thing? So I guess, you know, I'm always looking for ways to improve things.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy who always says, let's fix what isn't broken.
Sure.
That's usually a recipe for disaster. But this isn't so perfect that you can't say it's not broken. It's not crap like the Pro Bowl. But it's not great either. It can be improved, and I'm wondering if that wouldn't have improved it a little bit, or something along those lines. Kind of like when I said about the Home Run Derby, about putting the targets in all three fields, center, right, and left field. And then if you go opposite, or if you center, mm-hmm. you get more points for that than just the dead pull home runs that most hitters like to do in batting practice or in home run derbies. Let's find a way to make it a little bit more intriguing for the fans.
Yeah, and really, based on what happened in last night's game, you know, we've been kind of touching on these subjects, obviously, the last couple of days, since it is All-Star time, and, you know, every time you get to one of these All-Star games, these subjects always come up, obviously. But there's no reason to really alter, in a way, much of what we kind of went over a little bit in the last couple of days. Maybe they should try, you know, Bryce Harper's little idea.
Just a little spin. It just puts a little spin on it. You
right.
know, we're not changing the game.
We're not reinventing the wheel here.
We're not going four strikes, five balls and four strikes.
Right.
We're not doing anything stupid here. We're just saying, hey, let's mix the teams up a little bit and make it more fun.
No, and no doubt about it. See, the other problem that you might run into from a baseball all-star point of view, especially, is kind of the dynamic that also goes on. You know, when we brought up attendance and other figures in recent times, one of the themes that I keep, at least I keep throwing out there when that conversation comes up is most TV markets keep getting steady increases. So the way baseball is, you know, you sub a guy in and the other guy's out for the rest of the game. There is still, to a degree, and I fell victim a little bit to this last night myself. At points in the game where, okay, maybe you just want to see the guys from, you know, your team. For example, I was flipping around, you know, while the game was going on, a couple other things, came back, and I'm like, oh, I'm stopping here because Francisco Lindor was up.
Right.
You're going to have that repeated, you know, all over the place.
Bingo.
So I'm not sure. Maybe another idea, players and managers would never go for this the way baseball has evolved, but maybe guys should play longer. Like, perfect example, way, way back when, the famed Ted Williams home run in the 41
game. You mean make the pitchers go longer?
Everybody.
So, I don't understand. So
if you're
a starter, play the starters,
you play the whole game.
Yeah, I don't like that.
See, they won't go for it. But,
yeah,
I mean, we used
to
have that.
I want to see. I want to see every All-Star play a little bit in the All-Star game. And to me, it would be kind of a smack in the face to make the team and say you're not good enough to play. The other guys play because the fan guy, you know, here's an example, Lindor. Lindor is about the only guy that made the All-Star game yesterday from the two teams we cover, the closest, Tigers and Indians, mm-hmm. that did really contribute. Had he won the fan vote and with his .252 batting average, I don't want him playing seven innings and then having the other guy get an inning or two, the other guys.
That's the flip side of what I'm saying. I agree with that side.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And quite frankly, like I said, you know, there's some guys who really didn't really earn their way there. And I think Francisco Lindor's power numbers are nice, 14 with 43 RBIs mm-hmm. for a shortstop. But he's been slumping really since April. His batting average dropped in May. It dropped again in June, and it's dropped here in July. But my point to all of that is, if you do make the team, though, you should play. And there's a reason why you're there. I don't want a more deserving manager/player-selected backup to not get time behind a fan-selected starter who is there because of popularity, not because of the way he's played. And that's kind of what I'm saying.
I get you, so there still are ways to think to maybe tweak it a little bit. I'm becoming more and more to, yeah, well, why not try out Bryce Harper's idea that was mentioned
right.
the other
that's
day.
I'm
becoming more open to this last couple of days have gone by.
I mentioned contributions from Tigers and Indians,
yes.
And how about it? Corey Kluber could not go because he pitched Sunday.
Same with Fulmer.
Michael Fulmer could not go because he pitched Sunday. So the rest of the guys that did go made contributions with the exception of Lindor. Jose Ramirez started and played third base and batted 2-for-2.
With a stolen base, by the by.
With a stolen base, thank you. Justin Upton got 2 at-bats, got a hit. He was 1-for-2. Michael Brantley got 2 at-bats, got a hit. He was 1-for-2. So
then
those
Andrew
three
Miller
guys
came
and then Andrew
on at the,
Miller
yep.
saved the game for the American League with his bottom of the 10th. One inning, struck out one, walked one, and got the save. The only guy, like I said, who really didn't have a line to look at was Lindor, who was 0-for-2 and struck out both times.
And on that quick note, honorable mention, I do know there are some Reds fans scattered around the area. Let's see, Votto went 0-for-1 with a walk, and soon-to-be owner of a donkey, Zach Cozart, went 1-for-2 starting at shortstop.
That's good. That is
I
good.
Love that story, by the by.
That is a great story. And I'll tell you what, remind everybody what it is after I remind everybody about what they already know. That when you want to watch sports, it's better to do it with groups of friends. And so the next time you host a watch party, you got to call an order from the B-Dubs party menu. Buffalo Wild Wings, they have even fresher ingredients now in their salads, like in the new Santa Fe salad, which you want to check out. The B-Dubs Fast Break lunch menu is outstanding. You get all the highlights from the menu at discounted prices every Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2. But when you want to have a party, seriously, you've got to order from their party menu and download their new app. Even if it's not a party, but you're just home and you want to watch and root for the team from your couch, your best move is the Buffalo Wild Wings takeout. Just download the new app, customize your order, save your favorites, schedule your pickups. B-Dubs also serving fan favorites for a limited time. You've got to check the barbecue pork grilled cheese. Simply amazing. And the Buffalo Loaded Tots, you'll love those too. Just call Buffalo Wild Wings whenever the games are on. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. And we're back right after this on the
Extravaganza. Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on indeed, talking a little more baseball. Coming up here in just a few, Jim Cushlin's conversation with Jim Weber, the voice of the Mud Hens, as they're in their break as well. Cush, yesterday... we talked about it ever so briefly, And that is, there doesn't seem to be a very big market for Justin Verlander right now.
Right.
And we're kind of wondering how many of the big-name players, J.D. Martinez, Justin Verlander, is a guy like Kinsler going to be on the block? You know, Victor Martinez is pretty much unmovable. So is Miguel Cabrera. That's not going to happen. But Justin Upton, I suppose, is a possibility, the all-star. But there's not much of a market for Verlander out there. And so many times when we see teams make the move for a player, even whether it's on a rental situation or not, like in this one, it would be longer term, a commitment to Verlander. It's almost always for pitchers to get, you know, for a contender to get over the top, a middle to the front of the rotation guy. That would certainly fit, you know, seem to describe Verlander. Are you surprised? Even though we know that the contract is kind of a bit of an albatross there. It's almost guaranteed the Tigers would have to eat some of that. Are you surprised there isn't anybody who wants to say, we're bringing on Justin bleeping Verlander here for our stretch run?
I'm a little bit surprised. When you word it like that at the very end there, yes, I'm a little bit surprised because, you know, he still has a brand name, if you will. There's still plenty of left, you know, in the tank, despite how much he's at times have been
struggling.
Did you
see him against the Indians the other day? You know, and that's the team that had tormented him all year.
Yeah, perfect call on that one. But the part that doesn't surprise me is the two things that are getting cited. One was, well, he's getting a little older, the skills are diminishing, see some of his outings this year. But then the one I'm hearing in the various rumor mills, again, depending on which rumor mills you're looking at, which of course is going to be a big thing for baseball these next couple weeks, is the whole contract thing. Yes, even though they want the Tigers to eat a bunch, they're having a hard time trying to figure out how much that would want to be. And that's kind of the one thing that I had said when we first started this now ongoing subject was, when it comes to Verlander, that contract is going to probably be the biggest thing that holds some teams off of it. So that angle doesn't surprise me.
That's part of it. The other part is the Tigers don't seem to be willing to deal with any kind of realistic requests when it comes to prospects.
Yeah.
That's the big problem here. Buster Olney reporting last week the Tigers will not lower their asking price. We know how much he costs in terms of money, so you can't expect a team that is looking for a guy like Verlander to put them over the top to be willing to part with all of those millions that he's got coming, or at least most of them, and a whole boatload of prospects, as if Verlander is, you know, right now Clayton Kershaw. He's not. He's 5-6 with a 4.73, while still capable of dominance, as we saw that great start on Saturday against the Indians. While he's still capable of dominance, and just 1 year removed from a 3.06 ERA and 250 plus strikeouts that really could have won him the Cy Young.
Got some votes, yeah.
It's not Clayton Kershaw right now. So I mean, it seems like the Tigers are treating it like he is.
Yeah, and that's gonna have to be the thing, you know, with Al Avila trying to negotiate this. If he's serious about wanting to get something for Verlander, the problem is, yes, you're gonna legitimately want at least a big time prospect, but you're gonna have to then be willing to also eat some more of the money too. It's really at the end of the day gonna come down to those two things combined.
I quoted Buster Olney. I'll also throw Ken Rosenthal in there now at Fox Sports, who reported over the weekend. Most teams view Verlander as a quote diminishing asset and will not consider giving up top prospects like the Tigers want unless the Tigers pay a sizable portion of that remaining contract.
There you go, right there.
And that's the key word there, sizable. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what it is. By the way, the Cubs have been mentioned as a possible suitor for Verlander, but our friend Anthony Fenech of the Free Press, we haven't talked to Anthony in a while, but he says that Chicago's interest is more smoke than fire as far as their interest in Verlander. So just, you know, a couple more names there to consider, or a couple more factors, I should say, to consider. As people
and they on the Verlander front, the Tigers really need to work hard on this and try to make something happen on the grounds of yet another blurb. I think this was on ESPN. I can't remember the writer off the top of my head on this one. Apologize for that. Was mentioning that because one of the original rumors was maybe the Cubs have called about Verlander. Well, now it's starting to be, now it seems like the Cubs, because of the Verlander and his contract mostly, they're trying to see if they could pry a Daniel Norris or even Fulmer, which if I'm the Tigers, no, I don't want to do that. Those are young and controllable, and you want to try to keep those guys if you're going to retool. Yeah.
And then there's guys like Justin Wilson, two bullpen guys who could carry a lot of value as well, especially since he took over the closer role.
Same thing,
as well,
younger guy, team control, and considering, no offense, Tigers fans, we're talking about the Tigers bullpen. he's been one of the few bright spots the Tigers' bullpen on a bullpen the last couple of years that has been utterly atrocious.
That's what gives him value if you want top prospect back, and that's the conundrum. All right, we're going to get another timeout here. On the way to the timeout, a four-pack of Any Day Ground Passes, as promised, to the Marathon Classic that starts at Highland Meadows on Monday. By the way, don't forget, Mike Miller will be broadcasting live from the Marathon Classic 5 to 6 all week long next week. We will broadcast the Extravaganza live Thursday and Friday from 3 to 5. Then Mike Jamison and Great Lakes Golf Today, Saturday 8 to noon, will be there at the Classic. Cheap Seats with Mick Gonzalez Sunday morning, and Kush all week long with highlights from the Classic. And we've got your four-pack of Any Day Ground Passes right now to caller 5 at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. More baseball talk coming up. Jim Cushlin's conversation with the voice of the Hens, Mr. Weber, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back we are, final segment here of this edition of the Extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Cushlin hanging out with you. Staying on the baseball theme, we were talking a little about the Verlander trademark of the All-Star Game a little bit earlier on. And, of course, there's another All-Star Game by the AAA All-Star Game from Tacoma. That's a late-night start time, by the by, a 9 o'clock start time for that. That'll be on MLB Network, by the by. So I figured, why not continue the kind of baseball theme here? We haven't checked in with this gentleman, and he's one of the best out there to give us a little insight on what we've seen from the Toledo Mud Hens here for the first half of the season, and more importantly, guys we might have to keep an eye on because of all some of the Tigers rumors that are out there. We welcome in the longtime play-by-play man for the Toledo Mud Hens, Jim Weber, joining us back in the program. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Hey, not bad, Jim. Down in Florida for a couple days, heading back for the series with Columbus tomorrow.
I'm totally jealous. But yes, you will be back, as you mentioned. Yes, Thursday is when the Mud Hens will start hosting Columbus. 41-46, 8 games out in the division. And what's interesting about that, Jim, and that's kind of where I want to start, is more of a first half, a little bit of a review of what we've seen out of the Mud Hens so far, is this was a team that, in theory, going in, they wanted to have some more veteran-type guys on both position players and for the pitching staff, with the goal of, hey, Mud Hens haven't had a winning season in a little bit, and want to make sure that we could try to do that. It hasn't worked out as well, and is some of that because they have more veteran guys, for example, like Omar Infante is amongst this team. You got a couple other guys, both pitching staff and otherwise, and it just hasn't worked out as much. So your overview so far of the first half and that kind of sort of plan of bringing in more veteran guys.
Well, I think they did that to try and help us, and they also, when they sign people, they want to make sure it's somebody that might help them. And so as a result, for example, Matt Dendecker just came back. He cleared waivers. John Hicks has been up there, and you know, Jim Adusi's been up there, although he's with us now. But the fact is, we were in first place, if you remember, for almost a month and a half.
And
then
true.
When Detroit started to push the panic button, everything started to happen, and of course it affected us as well. But 41-46 isn't too bad, but keep in mind, we're already 16 games into the second half, because by the time we get to the All-Star break, we've gone way past the midway point. So we're only down to 50-some games, and there's still a chance, and we'll have to gain ground against Columbus. We just took them 3 out of 4 a week or two ago. So, and there's moves always during the break. For example, we released Michael Almanzar. He was terrible the last couple of games. I don't know where his head was, but they released him. And they just announced that Dendecker cleared waivers, so we get him back. So the team is still pretty decent, and the pitching is pretty decent, although we've got a lot of pitchers that have moved up and down as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's such a good point to remind everybody who may forget. Yeah, don't forget, guys, minor league seasons end on Labor Day, so very good point. We are already, from a international league perspective, already past the halfway point. You know, one thing jumps out at me, Jim, that I'm looking at with some of the position players in this lineup, not a whole ton of power. You have Stephen Moya at 7 homers, Brian Holiday with 6, Jacoby Jones with 8, Almanzar, who you just mentioned, got released. He had 7. Efren Navarro was 7. So there's not a ton of power in terms of this roster makeup right now. Is there any way that can possibly change in the second half, or the sort of shortened second half, as it were?
No, I don't think so. I think the guys you mentioned are the guys that are going to hit maybe 15. You know, we don't have the Mike Hessmans anymore, and those people come along every now and then, but You don't need that, though, if you can score runs in other ways. But the problem is we've been near the bottom of the league in hitting all year. I think last time I checked, we were like at 243 or 244, which was pretty much on the bottom. Not that it's a very important thing, but then again, it can be. You know, if you look at some of the teams with good hitters, they're not doing well either. So it just has to be a combination of defense, pitching, and hitting that all has to come together. And we just took 8 out of 9 here recently.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, lost 3 straight before winning the last game on Sunday in Durham 5-1. So that was a big win to pull the Mud Hens within 5 games of 500.
Your thoughts as we shift over to the pitching side of things. We're talking with Jim Weber, longtime voice of the Toledo Mud Hens. Mud Hens, by the way, back out on the field to start the quote-unquote second half at Fifth Third Field against Columbus. The All-Star game is tonight for AAA. We'll get to that in just a moment. Your overall impression of the starting rotation for the Mud Hens, because for the most part, there hasn't been a lot of changes to it, with the exception that more recently Matthew Boyd has become part of that rotation as he got sent down a little while ago from the Tigers, but you still have Verhagen, Buck Farmer's there. There was Honorable Sanchez, for a few starts. Your overall thoughts on how the starting rotation has looked this year?
Well, the addition of Boyd is a huge help, although I don't think he should be here. He probably should be back in Detroit, and he probably will be sooner or later. Drew Verhagen's made a 180 turnaround. He's been pretty good this year. Buck Farmer's the best control I've ever seen, even though he's had bad games. Going into the game the other day, he had walked only 12 all year while striking out 72. So that's huge. And he had 2 big games for Detroit. He shut out the White Sox and one other team. So they know he can do it. It's just that he's just not quite ready. And then, and the guys you mentioned are people that could go up, but most likely they're going to be here, except for Boyd. I think Boyd might go back.
Yeah, I'm thinking that too. And in that case, because it's going to be a little different. You know, usually when we think of the guys that might be coming up, we're usually talking in the context of September call-ups. That's not necessarily, of course, as we know, going to be the case this year with the probable trades, at least a few that in theory are coming down these next couple weeks. It's going to get some of these guys up here sooner. If any of the pitch, this is where I definitely agree on the Matt Boyd part of it. Any of the starting pitchers or any pitcher for that matter that gets traded away, I think Boyd will get one of the first calls. Give me a couple of other names that fans should look out for, because they might get called up sooner rather than later based on some big parent club trades.
Well, we've got some young guys that are very promising. I think the one guy that they are really counting on for the future is Joe Jimenez, and he's here right now. Youngster throws anywhere from, he can slow it down to 82, and he can get it up there about 97. So he's a guy they're counting on, I think, for the future. But we also have a lot of veterans here as far as relief pitchers. Like Kyle Ryan's been with the Tigers before. You know, he's here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the young guys I like is Ruben Alanis, who just came back up. He throws hard. Most all these guys throw pretty hard. But then we have a lot of veterans that probably aren't going, like Edward Mojica, Logan Kensing, those types that I doubt are going to go up, but you never know. But most of the time, I'm just trying to think of the last time they did it, but most of the time they're not big on calling a bunch of guys up in September. Normally they just call a few that might be used, and that'll be up to Brad, too. Brad Osmus and Alavila will talk it over. You know, they'll decide, but it just depends on the team. Over the years, some teams just call a whole bunch of guys up to get them some time, but I don't think Detroit does that all the time.
And that is very true. The Tigers, in recent times especially, have not liked doing that, particularly during the Jim Leland tenure. That was very, very true. Of course, the Tigers were winning a lot more with Jim Leland, so the last thing he wanted to do was have some of the kids up and taking meaningful at-bats in September. That may not be the case, but that does still feel like kind of an angle the Tigers on the top go. All-star game, by the by, for AAA. It's out at Tacoma, so it's a late night start time for everybody at 9 o'clock. It'll be broadcast, by the way, on the MLB network. Mud Hens do have a couple of players on the team, but only one's going to play. Jeff Farrell, he's going to end up representing the team as essentially the lone guy who can actually go out there and pitch. These are both relievers. The other one, if I'm reading this right, is
Arsenio
Leon. But he's hurt right now, so Farrell's going to be the only one. Give me a little bit of lowdown of what we've seen out of them to make them all-stars, and for in Leon's case, when he'll be returning from his injury.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he had something pop the other day. He could be done for the year. They haven't said that yet, but they'll go through MRIs and all that stuff, and he'll get examined, and so far they're not letting anything out, but we don't have too many weeks to go. You know, as you said, we're done on Labor Day. And so I don't know. I don't know how serious it is. They haven't told us anything yet. But Jeff Farrell is the real deal. Now, last year, he got to Detroit, and it was a dream year for him. And the way he's pitching right now, he probably should get another chance. There's a guy that'll probably go up. And I'll tell you what determines a lot of the call-ups, and that is if they're on the 40-man roster. If they're already on the 40-man, then they don't have to clear a spot for him.
Good point.
That depends, too. There are different dates, you know, that there's so many things that can happen. I know people always laugh when I say this, but you really do need to be a Philadelphia lawyer to figure out some of these contracts and some of the things that can be done. And, you know, it just boggles the mind sometimes.
Yeah, and then there's also the extra part that's probably in that lawyerese somewhere in there about, young players, if they're not rookies or haven't achieved rookie status yet, so when does the clock start for arbitration and all that? That's another one of those legalese that's totally in all that stuff. I do not envy the guys that have to sift through all that. With a side note on the AAA All-Star game, are you a fan of it? Do you think it's a good thing overall for not just the minors, but baseball in general, because I kind of like knowing that that it's in the same week and they plan at the same time as a major league game one day later. You fan of it?
Yeah, I think it really helps the city that hosts it. You know, when we had the last one, and the last one we had was 06. It was a huge event. Of course, we coupled that with the LPGA event and had all the girls down there too. But, you know, it's each particular city that bids on it, and when they get it, it's a year of preparation. And I don't know why they did it, but the Columbus Clippers next year have both big events. They have the All-Star game and the AAA championship game, and they're in for a lot of work, I can tell you that. But, it's kind of fun, and it's a 9 o'clock start. And keep in mind, though, that's an early start for those people. They got to get there by 6 o'clock. So, you know,
good
you try
point.
And split the difference. You try and split the difference for the local people plus the people in the East where the major audience is, except for the extreme West Coast. Most of the viewers are going to be, in the Midwest and Northeast and, you know, areas like that. So, yeah, they just try and split the difference to give everybody a chance to see it.
And that's such a good point because it is in Tacoma, Washington. So, yeah, 9 o'clock may seem like a late start time from our point of view, but that's true. That's an hour earlier than normal start times if you're over in that Pacific time zone. Jim, we always appreciate the time. Always appreciate the insight. Have some good broadcasts down the way here in the second half of the season. Maybe we'll check in with you when we get a little closer to September for a little bit of an update on them, on the Mudhens then. And thanks so much for the time today.
All right, well, the interesting now as we wrap this up is the fact we want to know who's going to go, who may be sold. There's like five names floating around that could be sold, but I'll be surprised if there's any takers to pick up those big contracts.
Absolutely. That's an ongoing story. Developments, we will have them for you as they continue, obviously, because this is a couple-week long story that will obviously be going on. Thanks so much for the time, Jim. We'll catch up with you later.
All right, Jim, always available. Thanks a lot.
That is Jim Weber, longtime voice of the Toledo Mudhens, joining us here on the Extravaganza. It hasn't been such a great season, of course, for the Mudhens, but they're not that far below the 500 mark. It would be nice to get a Toledo team with a winning record, obviously, and I'm very curious. That's the biggest thing I'm curious about. Some of these guys, quite possibly a Jeff Farrell, who, as Jim Weber mentioned, he got a little bit of a call-up last year. We all feel like we know some of these trades are inevitable for the Tigers. He feels like a name, especially, and Jim was also mentioning 40-man rosters. Well, don't forget, if a guy gets traded away from the big club, there's an open spot on the 40-man roster, you know, as well to go with that. So it'll be very interesting to see who gets the call-ups on the other side, because being in the Tigers' position, we wouldn't expect them necessarily to get major league players back in some potential deals. They would be prospects, or if, say, Verlander gets traded, a prospect and some salary being eaten, but it highly unlikely that you would find situations where major league talent comes back. So to fill those major league roster spots, those guys are going to be coming from Toledo. So very interested to see who it'll be that'll get some of those call-ups. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Mike Miller on Drive Time. He's coming at you next. And then, of course, as we go on this week, we'll have Major League Baseball returning to the airwaves Saturday and Sunday. Yankees-Red Sox from Fenway to start your second half. Saturday at 3, Sunday Night Baseball at 7. So you got a couple more days, obviously, and then baseball, whether it's AAA, the rest of the minors, or the majors, getting back underway. Thanks so much for tuning in here on this edition. Mike Miller Drive Time coming at you next, and we'll talk to you later.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.